This is Patient Care Theory 2, Unit 13, Part 1B, Fluids and Electrolytes, and specifically let's talk about potassium abnormalities. Now, there are three other electrolytes, calcium, magnesium, and sodium. Those are in your homework on Blackboard. There are videos for those, so watch them, download the slides, review the things. Sodium is an important one because we see hyponatremia, probably the most common electrolyte abnormality that we see that's fairly readily identifiable is hyponatremia, or low serum sodium, during the summer months when people are outdoors and losing a lot of fluids and not replacing the salt as well. But I'm going to talk about potassium abnormalities for two reasons. One, because hyperkalemia in particular can be life-threatening, and two, there's a drug that you can give to help lower the serum potassium level. Anyone know what that drug is, by chance? Yeah, to lower the serum potassium level. It is, drum roll, believe it or not, sounds totally counterintuitive, but salbutamol. Now, if you think, oh, that makes sense, it shouldn't make any sense at all to you. I'll explain why it shouldn't make any sense at all. So potassium, what does it do? It regulates muscle excitability. It's important for normal functioning of not just myocardial contraction, but conduction. And it's also plays a role in pH balance. And where was I? Sorry. Hypokalemia. So hypokalemia is not frequently a medical emergency for us, but it can cause cardiac excitability. So with hypokalemia, you tend to get increased heart rate and ectopic beats, so premature beats, like premature ventricular complexes. And you can get muscle cramping with hypokalemia. So when you think about hypo and hyper levels of different electrolytes, think reverse. Hypo causes excitability. Hyper causes depression. I know that sounds totally counterintuitive, but hypokalemia, for example, hypocalcemia, which is low serum calcium, causes excitability, and hyper causes depression. I think I got that out right. Is that okay? Okay. So hyperkalemia, let's talk about that, because this is the one we encounter that's a bit of a concern. So hyperkalemic patients become lethargic. On the ECG, we're looking at a 12-lead ECG, you see peaked T waves. I'll show you what that looks like. So they're not just tall, but they're pointy at the top, as opposed to rounded T waves. With hyperkalemia, eventually you get a slow heart rate. That's a late sign, a very worrisome sign. And you get weakened cardiac contractility, so you may get a patient who presents hypotensive. Now, classically, the patient who is hyperkalemic is the patient on renal dialysis. He's got a history of renal failure, they're on renal dialysis, and they're in between their dialysis sessions, and they become hyperkalemic. And they also classically have a chronic metabolic acidosis, and we'll talk about acidosis after this. So they can also develop heart failure. And when I say heart failure, apart from the pump not functioning properly, what do I typically mean in terms of clinical presentation when I say heart failure? What would you find on assessment, Matt? No, not an unsustainable arrhythmia. That's a great answer, but not the right one. But yeah.
Pulmonary edema.
Pulmonary edema, yeah. So when we say heart failure, we're talking about patients in pulmonary edema. So left ventricular failure, where blood backs up into the lungs, the pulmonary vascular system becomes congested, and the fluid starts to leak into the alveoli. So you auscultate the chest and you hear crackles. So when we say heart failure, you know, people have chronic heart failure, but when we get 911 calls for heart failure, we're talking about people who've got heart failure and pulmonary edema, who are in respiratory distress. So hyperkalemia can cause heart failure or can exacerbate heart failure in a patient who's got a history of heart failure. That's what tall peak T waves look like. So You know, the lead you use most often for monitoring ECG is lead 2, and those look tall and peaked, but you want to get a 12-lead ECG, and you can really see it pronounced in some other leads. So, but it's a lot of it, a lot of the clinical presentation, the 12-lead presentation is contextual, right? Depends on the context. If I had a 34-year-old who had no history of renal failure, no medical history, no meds, no allergies, I would be wondering, like, why the heck is this guy in failure? Or why the heck does this guy have tall peak T-waves? You know, it just wouldn't make any sense. So context is really important. So hyperkalemia in terms of severity. So normal potassium is 3.5 to 5 milliequivalents. So severe hyperkalemia, which is considered greater than 7 milliequivalents, you'll see an ECG that looks like that. You've got peak T waves, but the QRS is starting to widen. So normal QRS is less than 0.12 seconds or less than 3 small squares on the graph paper. So if you get a QRS that's starting to widen, that's one sign. You get depressed CNS with hyperkalemia. You can get paralysis, which is a late sign, slowing the heart rate, widening the QRS. P wave amplitude decreases, although I'll be frank, I never look at the P wave amplitude. PR prolongation, and we'll talk about that later. Heart blocks can happen, heart failure can happen, and cardiac arrest you can expect to see with potassium levels in the 8 to 9 milliequivalent levels. And you're looking at some really wide, bizarre QRSs when you're getting up to potassium levels at that high, right? And that's serum levels. So that's what we measure in the blood. When you're looking at the cardiac cell, you've got potassium concentrated on the inside and sodium concentrated on the outside, and there's less potassium. In the blood. So when we're measuring serum levels of electrolytes, we're not getting a full picture. We don't know, you know, what the electrolyte concentration is like in the cells. We just know what it's like in the blood. So sometimes the blood levels are helpful, sometimes they're not always helpful, but that's all we've got to go by in the hospital. For treatment, so the idea is to lower the potassium level. And again, context is everything, right? You're going to see hyperkalemic patients most commonly in patients with a history of renal failure that are on dialysis. The other category you might see it in is in the patient who's diabetic ketoacidosis. Anyone who's got an acidosis is likely going to be hyperkalemic. They go hand in hand. In acidosis, you get hyperkalemia. With mild hyperkalemia, sometimes they use a suppository called K-exhalate. I don't think many people are using K-exhalate anymore because the efficacy of K-exhalate is not that great, but the idea is with K-exhalate is that it's a rectal suppository, and it's supposed to draw potassium out of that part of the anatomy, the butt. So it's used for mild hyperkalemia sometimes. For hyperkalemia, either confirmed or suspected with hypotension and a wide QRS, again, history of renal dialysis. I think in your notes it says history of renal failure. What I really mean is not just renal failure, but renal failure patients who are on dialysis. You can patch the base hospital doc and give get an order for salbutamol, typically nebulized salbutamol. And salbutamol is, like epinephrine, is a sympathomimetic. And what sympathomimetics tend to do is they tend to cause potassium to move from the extracellular space to the intracellular space. So it lowers the serum potassium by driving it into the cell, and that creates more of a balance when you've got an excess potassium in the vascular space. So sympathomimetics all work that way, but salbutamol by nebulizer is a little bit safer than, say, epinephrine by nebulizer. We give that to croupy kids, but an older patient in renal failure, nebulized epi might be a little too much, too harsh on their heart. So salbutamol works well. And remarkably, salbutamol lowers potassium by 0.5 to 1.5 milliequivalents for like a 5 milligram dose. That's amazing. That's incredible efficacy. So that's typically for both PCB and ACB, the first line drug. if you have someone who, you know, looks really lethargic and weak and has wide QRS complexes, and they've got history of renal dialysis and they're between dialysis, and oh, it's going to
no, dude.
It's going to see if she's going to slap me. And call for ACP backup, and they'll administer calcium gluconate. Now, while salbutamol drives potassium from the extracellular space to the intracellular space and lowers serum potassium that way, calcium gluconate doesn't do anything with potassium. What calcium gluconate does is, because hyperkalemia causes the heart muscle to contract more weakly, calcium actually causes the heart to contract more forcefully. Right? So it has the opposite effect. So it helps to counter that weak contractility. Sodium bicarb, interestingly enough, so sodium bicarbonate is an alkaline solution. It's a buffer, and we don't typically give sodium bicarb. It's kind of, you know, calcium salbutamol and calcium gluconate is probably all you need, but if the patient's so sick none of that's working, we might go to sodium bicarbonate. So sodium bicarbonate, as I said, is an alkaline solution, and when you administer an intravenous alkaline solution, it causes hydrogen to come out of the cells to buffer the bicarb, and when hydrogen comes out of the cell, potassium shifts into the cell along an electrical gradient. Right? So that's how it works. Insulin and D50 works via a different mechanism. Insulin opens the cell to glucose, and when it makes the cell permeable to glucose, potassium shifts from a high concentration to a low concentration through that now permeable cell. But if you give someone insulin, you're going to lower the blood sugar, so you get him D50. You've got to chase it with D50, right? Make sense? Okay. Listen to the podcast for more review. It'll all come together. Do you listen to my podcast, Andrea? I just wanted to know if you're driving your car and you listen to my podcast and you're going, oh, Rob, can we take a break? It's Saturday morning at 2 a.m. and I'm tired of hearing your voice. And Nikita turns to her and says, it's the podcast. Just shut them off. Yeah. And you, come on. What's wrong with you? Did I tell you the story about...